This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Daily Show Ears Edition. This is Devin Delaquanti, writer for the Daily Show. And today I am here with Emmy-nominated writer, actor, stand-up, and the newest Daily Show correspondent, Josh Johnson, everyone.
Hey, man.
Welcome, Josh.
How you doing?
It's been an exciting few weeks. So you've been a writer here, for people who don't know, since 2017. That's when I met you. That's when we became office mates, paired together.
Yeah.
And now you are the newest member of the Daily Show news team. Walk us through it. How did this happen? How did your journey lead you to the Daily Show and onto the news team?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I got hired in 2017. We were office mates. I think that when I was even interviewing, when I came in for my interview, I think I randomly saw Roy and Hassan and just like in the hallways. And I was like, oh, geez, wow. You know, and it just started to feel less like a potential office job I was going to get and more like an actual, this is like where they make the Daily Show, which you would know showing up to the building. But yeah, that was really wild. And then, yeah, when I interviewed, it was with Trevor. It was like, I felt like we were vibing, but also he can never tell if that's like, you've definitely got the job or these are just nice people.
Yeah.
You know? So when I got the call that I got it, I was like floored. And then, yeah, showing up, I feel like you were the best person to be paired with for the beginning, because you were very gracious with all the questions. And you were also like giving me tips of like, oh, hey, there's a chance no one will mention this.
Yeah, yeah.
So just be ready for this as well.
I feel like your catchphrase that first couple years was, quick question.
Yeah.
I would feel a tap on my shoulder and just, quick question.
Yeah.
And yeah. Less so now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if anything, now I have a quick question, but I know that you won't have the answer.
That's good.
I'll be like, hey, I don't know where to sit anymore.
Yeah. I have nothing for you.
Yeah.
I don't know where you should throw stuff out. I don't know any of this stuff anymore.
Yeah. But no, I think that we had a good dynamic. I think that it only took a short year and a half before our office was legendary. I don't know if we'll ever reach those heights again.
Well, it was very early on in the process that we were in our office, and then you were very close with Dulce Sloan.
Yeah.
Who she started as a correspondent then, and I don't even know how soon it is into your time in the office. She came in with a trophy for you and handed it to you, and it was clearly she was roasting you by giving you a trophy.
It was brutal. And well, basically, this is what she did that was cruel, is she mailed it to me. So it was my first piece of mail at the show. And so I was like, the trophy was a Nuck If You Buck trophy, which is a trophy for a song that I despise.
Sure.
Right. And so I can't remember. Yeah, it was I think maybe I opened it. Was shocked, and then
I remember you putting your head in your hands, which is a weird thing to see someone do when they've just opened a trophy.
Yeah,
so there was a lot of things going on in that moment.
Then I think I put it in her office, for like a day or something.
Sure.
Just try to leave it with her.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
she brought it back, I think, to our office.
Yeah.
And she was like, nah, this is yours.
Yeah. It did feel like it immediately became a horcrux for you. Like
a
piece of your soul broke off and was imbued into that trophy.
Yeah. Because
the other thing that was great about it was about like to Josh Johnson for something for knucking and bucking. But it wasn't even the winner. It was the runner-up.
Yeah.
You didn't even win the trophy. You
Which apparently was Roy.
Yes.
That was Roy that was helping her come up with this horrific gift. And then, we had, what, I'd say all the way up until COVID, we had such a great, like a full, whatever, maybe like nearly 3-year run in that office of just like, phenomenal times.
Yeah, 2017 until 2020.
Yeah. And then, oh, geez, yeah.
The powers that be. It was too powerful. They had to split us up.
Yeah,
they had to mix it up.
They split us up first with a global pandemic.
Yes, yes.
And then when we got back, an office switch. And,
really, nothing else would have been powerful enough to break us apart in
yeah,
the office.
But, yeah.
You know, I also remember you, I'm very kind of neat and organized and fastidious. And mm-hmm. you're less so,
I think.
Is that fair to say?
It's
to
the more point than where fair.
You had back injuries at that time, and to make your chair more comfortable, you put bubble wrap on it.
Yeah.
Not even like a pillow or something ergonomic. You just had like loose bubble wrap, like you were an Amazon package.
So
that's how you were protecting yourself in the office.
Basically, I did not, I had tried all of the sort of normal ways of dealing with the problem, and all of the small pillows were too small to where they were just like maybe hiking my hips forward. And all the big pillows were so big that the chair was not supporting me and the pillow.
Sure.
So then I was like, all right, I got all this bubble wrap from, I can't remember what it was. I think it was actually something that had been sent to the office. And it was about to be thrown away.
Could it have been the Dulce trophy?
It could have been the trophy.
At least you got bubble wrap out of the trophy.
It could have been the trophy. And so then I went ahead and just wrapped a little bit of the chair in some bubble wrap because it felt like enough give and enough firmness.
Sure.
It sounds crazy. Like, I actually forgot I did this until you just said
yeah. One other thing I wanted to bring up from our time as office mates, I wrote this down, because I went through some of our old messages where we used to like talk when we were in the office, and I had forgotten about this. There was a time when I walked into our office, and on your computer screen was a Vice article that said, the headline was, "Making people laugh for a living sucks." In yeah. all caps.
Yeah.
And it felt like such a cry for help that you just left that open on your computer screen in the office. I'm like, is everything all right, man? Do you want to talk? What's going on?
That is so funny. I also forgot this happened. I am not the best at reading articles in the moment.
Sure.
I clicked on the article and then I think someone paged me or something. And then I just left it as like nearly my screensaver almost.
Pretty much.
For like maybe 2 days.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I didn't even put it together how it must look until you said something. Because I was like, oh, yeah, not me. It's the guy who wrote the article. I'm just kind of trying to see how.
I think you're projecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have bad news about what you have to do as a correspondent is making people laugh for a living is kind of, you've kept on the path.
Yeah.
Even if it sucks, you are very much on that path now.
I've really stayed the course.
You have. Yeah.
It's a good thing that I did not write that article.
Yeah.
I was just sort of curious what this other person was going through.
That's good.
Yeah. If I'm being completely honest, the entire transition from writer to like correspondent, what I'm doing now was very, very like quick.
Really?
So, yeah, yeah. So I'm very excited. I feel like I've been working towards it for a long time.
Yeah.
But also I'm very much like trying to keep my eyes wide open.
How did you find out? What was the, was it a phone call? Was it a call into someone's office? Was it, you know, like the.
Yeah, yeah. It was a phone call from my reps and it was very close. to when I was first on the show. So it was like that Cookie wow. Monster thing to the, yeah, it was like, because my time as a writer was going to come to an end very close to the end date in March. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, wow, this is all happening. Yeah, it was just a beautiful transition one to the other.
One thing that people at home won't know is you and I have written with Dulce a lot, and there we did a test show for John to come back, sort of like a rehearsal, and you filled in for Dulce at that test show. And the energy in the building was just so palpable the whole day, where it was like John was back, and then the whole, we hadn't done a full what's called a whip, where like you go around from all the different news team members, like, okay, we're gonna go to Costa and then to Desi and then to Dulce and then to Ronnie and then to Klepper. So everyone's there, it's a ton of energy, and Dulce wasn't in New York at that time, so you filled in for her. Believe me when I say you murdered so hard. You
thanks.
It was so incredibly funny. And in a day where there was so much energy in the building, the fact that you were just destroying out there, and we were all laughing, and I don't know if you felt it or not, but there was a moment of like, oh, he's gonna be a correspondent on the show because he is. It was that level of funny. And it was also like Dulce's voice, because you know how to write for her so well, and then she did so great in that bit, but it was also your voice in this kind of weird way, and you could see like a glint in John's eye, and everyone was like, oh my God. It felt like one of those showbiz moments of like, this is a star-making performance. At least it felt that way from my point of view.
Oh, thanks, man.
Ah, it was great.
John, can I interrupt here?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's Dulce Sloan, everybody. Dulce, I'm going to assume that's the same diner. What part of the diner is that?
Oh, I'm outside the diner because I'm talking to black people. We don't go to diners.
Well, what unique perspective do black people have about this election, Dulce?
Their unique perspective is it's the same as everyone else. You know, they don't want this shit. They can't believe that out of 300 million people, this country churned out the exact same old man fight we just had. One lady told me she hoped she'd die in the voting booth. I can't blame her. I asked one dude what he thought about the candidates. He told me, leave him the fuck alone. And he was right to say it. I still threw hands, but he was right.
And then one of my other favorite days was when we found out that you were going to be a news team member, because we were in the morning meeting, we watched all the clips, and you were there as normal. And then they made an announcement that Josh is joining the show as a news team member. And we cheered. It was so fun and exciting because it was like as if we were your friends finding out, but also your colleagues finding out. And also we get to work with you in that capacity, which was so fun. And so then we go off and we pitch some ideas, and we ended up doing that Cookie Monster piece, which was really fun because there was so much juice in that. Because it's, I think we feel like it's a gift anytime we get a story that is political, but pop cultural, but has a bit of silliness to it where we can play with it.
Josh, look, I love hating stuff too, but aren't you being a little too hard on Mr. Monster? He's trying to fight shrinkflation.
Oh, you're telling me that Cookie Monster just brought up shrinkflation the same week as Biden on his own? The only words I've ever heard Cookie Monster say are me and Cookie. Who taught him shrinkflation?
Walk me through that day from your point of view as a member of the news team, having obviously you've experienced it as a writer, but what was it like as a member of the news team putting that piece together?
It actually felt fairly quick because then I had to do so many other little things mm-hmm. that I could only pop in to the office with you all, you know, really after you were like close to done, right? Like
y'all were
close to done. And then we went to rehearsal. And then rehearsal was okay. And then we went to the rewrite. And I do feel like at rewrite, we made it much better going into the final for the show mm-hmm. than it was in rehearsal. Because I thought it was really funny going into rehearsal. And then, I think the whole thing just elevated, which was really, really cool to see. Because sometimes whenever you come out of rehearsal, especially as a writer, you're like, well, I might be out of ideas.
Yeah.
Because
you've been working on it all day.
Yeah, working on it all day, and those were my best ideas.
Yeah.
And then you either come out with a directive or you come out with something else.
Yeah, because we initially had an ending where you were just furious at Cookie Monster the whole time. The basic gists of it were that you were, why would Cookie Monster care about shrinkflation? He drops cookies all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's bigger problems on Sesame Street. Oscar is homeless.
Yeah,
so that came up. And then we were trying to come up with like an emotionally grounded reason for you to hate Cookie Monster. And we thought it was funny that you were never allowed to eat cookies as a kid.
Yeah.
So you just had to sit on the couch eating carrot sticks and you watch this monster just throwing cookies into his face and he's not even getting them in his mouth. And so then it ended with you like eating a bunch of cookies and crying.
Yeah.
But then like you try something in rehearsal and it didn't like hit the way we wanted it to hit. So we got rid of that. And we added this thing where we talked about it at the desk, that there was something weird about the fact that Cookie Monster was talking about shrinkflation. And we didn't know if Ronnie would talk about it in the headline or if you should talk about it in the chat. And we went back and forth, I remember, when we were rewriting it. And then we're like, let's just take a crack at it. And we got to the line of like, why is Cookie Monster bringing up shrinkflation on his own?
Yeah.
And that felt like such a great line in the voice of your stand-up and everything. And how is that process as a performer for you to kind of work with the writers and tell us your voice? And are you teaching us how to write for you? Or
I think, I don't know, personally, I've always thought like voice is relative. Like no matter who I've been writing for, I feel like outside of something being like dirty or something, I feel like people just pick good jokes that they want to say. So I know that's what voice is supposed to be, but I think that sometimes people think about it so much in a way that's a little, it's a little limiting, because it'll be like, oh, there's all these great jokes, but none of them are in the person's voice. It's like, no, though, any person who likes jokes will pick lots of jokes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that for me, I think everyone already baseline writes things that I want to say. Like every writer that we have, I see from when I was writing, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like I see their jokes when we're all pitching and everything, and I'm like, that's a great joke, that's a great joke, that's a great. So voice to me is relative to like, I, you know, that point of view. I get that it's important, but I also think that coupling what is clearly a great joke with how you want to say it, mm-hmm. is much more collaborative than just that's a great joke, but it's not in my voice, so I won't even try to finagle the wording or something. I think that the entire point of a voice and what makes it memorable is making as many things work as possible, you know? And then as far as the performing it, I was more like, because you are figuring out who you're gonna be to everybody in the moment and as you progress.
Mm-hmm.
So then figuring out who you're going to be to everyone is a collaborative process as well, because to some degree, you are like being however you authentically feel about the bit.
Yeah.
Then for the rest of it, you also have to be aware of how you come off to people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We had that whole run of Cookie Monster doesn't have a digestive system. He doesn't know the feeling of having his pants around his ankles and having to shuffle through his own apartment like he's robbing the place, and then his girlfriend walks in.
Explain to me why Cookie Monster cares about toilet paper. He doesn't have a digestive system. He's never taken a shit in his life. He doesn't know the pain of sitting on a toilet with a stomach full of lamb curry, running out of paper, and having to sidestep your way out, doing the pants around the ankle waddle, like you robbing your own house, only for your girlfriend to walk in, see you, then immediately walk out. Do you have to deal with that, Mr. Cookie Monster? Because me did. Me very much did.
And we talked about, will this work if people don't know Josh yet? Because it felt like a way that you would deliver it as a performer, and it was coloring in like anxiety in the character that is you on the show. And it's sort of like, well, can we do that? Will people connect to it? Or are we kind of establishing like this is what Josh is like, that it is like nervous, anxious, angry, like we're painting a lot of different colors of what your character is. And I feel like it worked really well. And now it's like, oh, we've established that for you, that now we can even go further with it and play with it more. and we're kind of introducing you and your psyche to the audience.
In an ideal way, you will not just come off like funny, but people will understand what your point of view is every time. And then, not saying that you should be predictable, but like, I think down the line, people get excited for your take on a thing because you come off a certain way, or because they think that they're excited to see what your point of view means to each new subject.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only, you know, it's only like one chat to go off so far, but yeah, I'm hoping that as we progress, people can get that feeling more often.
We have to take a quick break, but we will be right back with Josh Johnson.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish. Yeah, I can drive. My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life. You know that.
His business is failing. His house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger. And we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money. And he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
You went out to talk to New Yorkers about the Trump sneakers that he announced, which, yeah. You know, he designed these sneakers and sold them at SneakerCon.
Now, what do you think of these sneakers?
You know, it's very patriotic. I think that there's no rules in fashion. You
okay.
can wear whatever you want, but me personally, I would not wear it.
Would you cop these?
Like, no.
Would you? You wouldn't?
Nope. Hard pass.
It looks very 2009 dated.
They actually, they look like they don't bend.
What are your thoughts on this shoe?
Trying to be chic.
Okay.
But also very nationalistic.
Got you. Now, would you wear the shoe?
No.
Okay.
How is it to go out into the field and kind of not necessarily have a plan, but just trust that the comedy will come either from the questions you ask or what people say, or then that it'll boomerang back on you, like where they were roasting your sneakers? Because I feel like you have a great, you are, especially in a dynamic when like Dulce is around, is I feel like you quickly get into that younger brother dynamic. And then there was literally a seventh grader there just roasting you on your shoes. So how
Huge
was going out to do that?
Seventh grader, yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool. I think that because all of funny is relative, I think that what can be funny and who can be funny is much, much broader than people imagine. And so I think when you're doing the pieces out there, it's important to sometimes take a step away and let the person you're talking to be funny, because if they have something funny to say, then that's way more interesting than something funny I have to say. Like, I already know what I would say. If I'm going to do all the jokes, then why did we come here? You know, the people that I'm talking to, especially the fact that I don't know them, the fact that their responses are earnest, is like, that's where all of the real comedy is.
How did you feel when a seventh grader walked up to you and he was as tall as Victor Wembanyama and then you had to stand next to him? Because it felt like you shrunk somehow.
It was crazy.
So you think if you wore these to school, you might get, like, roasted up?
Definitely.
Yeah. Because, like, what grade are you in?
Seventh.
You're in seventh grade?
Yeah.
How tall are you?
6'1". I play basketball.
You should.
When he said he was in the seventh grade, I had to get him to repeat it maybe twice. And even then I was like, nah, like this feels like, you know, like when a baseball team is like, trust us, he's in the seventh grade.
Yeah.
You know? Because my man was huge. And even with him, I was like, oh yeah, this kid's like got his own take on the thing just from me asking. And I think that's what audiences enjoy too, is just there's always gonna be someone who has the same take as you, totally different, and then something you wouldn't have thought of. And I think getting all of that from the people at large is more interesting than me just talking, mm-hmm. and then maybe it lines up with one of those three things.
Did you imagine that your Daily Show debut would be you being roasted by a middle schooler? Which seems like the nightmare, right? Like,
it is on brand, though.
Sure.
Those are pretty bad, but what about your shoes, dog?
What?
Those are some dirty-ass shoes, bro.
What?
Those are some stank-ass shoes.
Oh, hell no. You about to run a marathon?
It's really about
never did that move.
It's really about Trump, is it? You lucky you're bigger than me, man.
As much as it is what I would not want for myself, it is probably the most likely thing to have happened.
Sure.
Yeah. And look, I thought it was pretty funny. Every once in a while you get roasted and you're like, they're just right. I don't even know if that's a light crisp. I don't even know if that's a full roasting.
Yeah.
Definitely not overcooked.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you about is how, over the years, working at The Daily Show has changed your approach to stand-up comedy. Because I'm, like, a huge fan of your specials, and when you put out Hashtag, and then Up Here Killing Myself, mm-hmm. the one where you kind of intercut between you and a therapist, I feel like you were so great at writing about big, broad, evergreen topics. And then I remember it was during the writer's strike. We weren't making shows. And you were doing stand-up, and you started posting stuff. And the thing you did about the Alabama boat fight
was the first thing.
I was like, oh, my God. And I was laughing so hard.
Did y'all see the Alabama brawl? Yo. Yo. Who knew Wakanda was in Alabama? That was crazy. Yo, that was wild. So many people came out of nowhere. That shit was like Black January 6th.
And I feel like you've kept up the momentum of writing about topical things and doing it. Do you think writing here and working here has made you want to do that more? Or is it just how social media is now with stand-up, where you're putting clips out more and more?
I think that the show has helped a lot in that the show has become its own sort of daily practice. For years in writing, when you don't feel funny or you don't feel like it or you don't feel creative enough or whatever, and you still manage to help make a show, I think is the greatest testament to that, like, art and creativity aren't these like esoteric ideas that are just going to come and go and leave you and stick with you sometimes. And it's not like an angel that might abandon you or something. Mm-hmm. It's like it's just a willingness to commit yourself to something every day. Mm-hmm. And
it's like lunch pail work, as
yes.
like John would say about democracy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that helped. And then, yeah, when we were on the writer's strike, I wasn't doing anything else. And so I felt like it was the perfect time to start doing that. And I've tried to keep up with it ever since. And I also just felt like if I can commit myself to putting out a lot of new stuff, especially on a place like YouTube, especially written jokes instead of just crowd work, mm-hmm. I think that it would, one, set me apart, and two, I'd be able to connect with the community that I'm trying to build in a deeper way. And so I think that the show has definitely helped me to both sort of grasp and learn how to communicate better, bigger ideas and stories that you have to both entertain people with, but also tell them why they should care about it in the same moment.
And immediately pivot to a comedic take on it.
Yeah.
You have to lay all the track of here's everything you need to know, and then here's an unexpected comedic twist on it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So I think that with the years of practice doing that here, it was something that really helped with stand-up, because it gave me a more like worldly approach, hopefully, to everything that I do.
You were on the road with Trevor a lot, too. When we were office mates in like 2018, 2019, every weekend, you'd be like, hey, man, what are you up to this weekend? I'd be like, oh, you know, my wife and I are going out. You know, we were getting ready to have a baby. We're painting the nursery. And you're like, yeah, I'm playing the United Center. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
But you would always be like, what are you up to? Oh, nothing much. I'm just doing a couple shows. And then I would look it up and it'd be like, you're playing at the, like, where the Chicago Bulls played, like it was nothing. So what did you learn doing that? And how did that prepare you for, you know, joining the show on camera?
I learned very often that it was not my show at all. Like, it was, you know, not that I ever thought it was, but just, you know what I mean? Like it was very, like, kind and gracious of Trevor to even bring me and everything. And I only say that because, like, you are part of this thing. And then people, you know, he has great audiences. Mm-hmm. So then the people were excited for anybody to open up the show or anything like that. So with Vince and I, it was such a rush of a feeling and everything. And then you'll do your set, you know, so I'm only doing a little bit of time. And then you do your set, and then you realize, like, the difference between what you could do with your time and then what he could do with his. And so you're just like, oh,
yeah.
Wow, this is this is very different. You know what I mean?
What's the biggest difference between you then and you now? Because it's been, like, probably 5 years even since you were doing those. Like, what
yeah.
do you think has changed in your writing and in your performing since then?
I think I'm just a bit more, like confident in what I want to say, and I also move more.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Cause Trevor was like, eventually you're gonna have to move. Like, he's like, you're doing an arena. You can't just stand there.
I mean, you did have to sort out your back with bubble wrap before
yeah.
you could do that.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
To be fair,
just turn and hear seven pops
yeah.
and then start walking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I'm that was kind of my sort of awakening to how big comedy could be. Hmm. Because I had always heard of comedy happening in these places, but to actually see it and not just see it, to like see it from backstage
yeah.
and to do some of it is like crazy. Like
yeah.
I always
You're
felt
like you two was here last night.
Yeah.
And now I'm on this stage. Like, what?
Yeah. yeah. I always felt like the most like blessed guest in the way of like being able to be around for that stuff. Cause that was just yeah.
yeah.
Crazy, man.
That's cool. Well, the fact that you found both confidence and humbleness is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, look, the any sort of humble, just trust me, it's been over years of terrible circumstance. Like, where was I? I was at this place. They had asked me to do the show. It was so funny. It was like when I still lived in Chicago, and it was like some sports bar. They wanted me to come, and I thought it was gonna be a showcase, but they just wanted me to come do like 45 minutes.
Okay.
So, which isn't actually the length of a show. That's the length of like a headlining
yeah.
set, but that's not the length of a whole show.
Yeah.
And so then I get there and I'm like, oh, is there a host? And they're like, no, it's all you. And I was like, oh, okay. And like, and I'm so early into stand-up, I didn't think to ask about like tickets or anything like that. They just asked me to come because I guess one of the night managers saw me somewhere else and liked me and was like, come do a show here.
Okay.
We'll pay you, whatever. And so then it's like not quite a sports bar, but sports were on and people were actively watching them. So then they turn off all the TVs. Without warning.
Oh no.
So then people are like, what are you doing? And then they're like, yeah, show starting. That was the introduction, by the way. Show starting. And so then I step on a wooden pallet.
Oh Oh, no.
And I have the microphone, and I'm just talking. And at one point, I could just kind of hear this guy go, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, my God. That's the word. What are you doing?"
Yeah. That'll keep you humble.
Yeah.
Did
forever.
You have that voice in your head when you're at the United Center that you were worried that that guy was going to be there again, hoping to see a Bulls game?
Yeah.
And then he's just going to go, "What are you doing?"
Any long silence in an arena setting, I hear, "What are you doing?"
Before we go, I do want to, you were talking of the internet earlier. I know they say not to read the YouTube comments or internet comments.
Oh, yeah.
But since you've joined the news team, I did want to take a look at what the response has been from the good people online to you joining the news team. So here's a few. Josh Johnson crushed it. His deadpan delivery, frozen pauses for the audience, and his inflection made every joke land. A fantastic new addition.
That's very kind.
It's a good one. This is my first time seeing Josh Johnson, and I laughed so hard I cried. Keep him on the show.
Wow. Thank you.
Very good. Calling for your job security. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then Josh Johnson is a national treasure. Daily Show, please buy this man some Jordans for the next shoe segment.
You know, if I had Jordans, maybe none of this would have happened.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? If I had Jordans, then maybe that kid would have had nothing.
What are you working with now? What are you? Because I'm sure we can't see your shoes on the camera. Definitely not on the Ears edition.
No. So right now I'm going with some On Clouds.
Okay.
They are the black on black, and they are one day old. I've only scuffed them once.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very okay.
Maybe avoid some middle schoolers.
Yeah, easily. I think I told you about this. This is years ago. Of how like when I used to live down the street from a middle school, and I would walk around the school.
I do remember this.
Yeah, I would take a left before I got to the school. I'd walk all the way around the school, and then so I was just basically taking the long way home, like I was a middle schooler.
Because, to avoid the middle schoolers?
Yeah, because, dude, the kids are like, and then one of them was big, too, so it's like you can't even, the fact that you're an adult doesn't even scare them, like.
Didn't a football, like, land at your feet or something? Am I remembering
that
right?
Yes. So this was not at home, but it was in my neighborhood. A football landed at my feet.
Nightmare.
And then I look up, and they're like, throw it back. But then the fence was actually like really, really high, like crazy high, to the point where I don't know how
they got it over.
They got it over.
They're preteens, most likely.
But the fence was
Their arms
high.
Have not fully developed yet.
But the fence was high.
No, I know. That makes it worse.
And so then I tried to throw it back, and I hit the fence.
Okay.
And it bounced back, and it hit me on my shoulder, and like... Yeah. I talked about it in stand-up once before where I was like, they roasted me so hard that I genuinely thought about calling the police. I was like, I don't care how it looks. I'll be the next, like, barbecue Becky Karen, whatever, but, like, they can't just get away with this. Because then I was like, all right, I'm just going to go. Because there's no way I'm going to get the ball over the fence.
I like to think that one of the kids that roasted you was the same kid that you saw in the sneaker piece when you went out, that he's just been your nemesis.
Yeah, that he's just got a great arm.
Schooler. Yeah, he's a great arm, and he's 7'1", and he's just following you around roasting you. Middle schoolers are your natural predator, so I hope you stay safe out there. Try to avoid, do all good things as a member of the news team, but avoid any middle schoolers who will roast you.
Probably just going to stay in the building.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's probably best for everyone. Well, thank you so much for joining me and Josh Johnson, and thanks for listening to The Daily Show Ears Edition.
Yeah.
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.